Okay, welcome to this class, Cults and World Religions. We're almost there. This is the last class over which you will be quizzed or tested. But before we even get to like all the cool stuff in class, I have been tasked to walk you through things for the lectures series. So it's my understanding you guys have received the lecture's notes. Is that true? And all of you who have been in Ezekiel have already been doing stuff online, so you're probably good to go. But if you have not signed into the class's website, please, as a personal favor to me, sign into the website just to make sure you can. Like, if you would do it by this weekend, that way there's a few days for you to come and talk to me and me to fix it. I mean, it doesn't take me days to fix it, but that way I have time to, like, sit down. I can enjoy my life, maybe play around a Fortnite, and then fix it. And I don't have to just be insane. So it would be a personal favor to me if you would do that. That way we can make sure it's working for you. It should be working for you. When you sign in, you will come to something somewhat like this. It won't be like this because I have a different set of classes than you will likely have. But if you go, it should show up like in your course overview. I think everyone is now currently enrolled in the special lectures class. Except me, I didn't enroll myself, so I'm not there. But you could also go to the list. It's this is what should show in your class thing. It's a nice little picture of grass. Yep. Just, it made me think of like something Wyoming-ish. And I Googled 1 Timothy just for picture ideas, but nothing that was free or that I was going to take my time to do. Or they were all like weird old comic book kinds of things. It didn't go right. But when you go into class, you will be presented with this. There are instructions here for you when stuff is due. And then all of the lectures are here. It says restricted, but it's just, the restriction is you have to listen to them in order. I don't know why you would want to listen to them out of order. But even if that's like, you're like, I'm going to do it backwards. No. It won't let you do that. You have to go in order. So once you finish one, you can do the next. At the bottom, there is your final quiz. And like a quiz prep thing, just to let you know. So all that is there, and you can deal with that as you desire. When you go into the lectures, this is the part that I especially want to point out to you. You will get this. It says video because it's going to play a video, but it's not a moving picture video. I know. It's this picture the whole time. But in order to make it work, I had to stick a picture in there. This is the lecture speaker, Mr. Bagley, who is Mr. Bagley's father, Mr. Bagley, and his mother, Mr. Bagley, or Gloria, if you are so inclined. So you get to play that and listen to that. Just so you know, if people are thinking about you, my wife suggested that what we do for the video is a 1-hour single sock puppet. going to the lecture. And I'll be honest, I looked to see if I could find anyone who had like a sock puppet for an hour that I could just dub the sound over, but I didn't find it. So I was going to throw it up for one video because I thought it would be hilarious. But
I create a 1-hour video.
Of just a sock puppet. So you could get lectures from a sock puppet.
Yes.
Anyway, when you click on this, I will. Yes, Robin. Yeah, they're all just audio. We thought we had, like, there was the thinking that there was video available, but they didn't have them. So what we have is an audio set. So it is just audio. You just listen to it. When you're done listening to it, you go to the answer to today's question. Do not skip this process. if you skip this process, I guarantee you will be emailing me later. Because, or you're going to watch this whole video again. And no one's going to want to watch the whole thing, the whole audio, listen to it again. So you will probably just be emailing me. So I know it's going to happen. I've already made my peace with this. I'm settled. But what I'm trying to do is limit the number of times that this is going to happen. So once you listen to this, after you have listened to the lesson, you click on this, you go to the question for the day. There is a question. You will answer the question. You will hit submit. Once you hit submit, you are done. And that should be the end of it. Any questions on this process? You should have received an email in September. So if you don't have that, and that's why I want everyone to log in. So if you don't have that, or you're not sure what happened or whatever, come find me. I can re-enter a new password, like a new temporary password, and send it out to you. And you can just talk to me if you need that. I have a last thing. And I can do it this afternoon. What's that? Oh yeah, I might have come through with some biases. So that's the process. It's pretty straightforward and pretty easy. Just don't miss the answer box. I tried to fix them, so you miss them, it will resolve, but that's the only issue I know of right now with the class. There is a student who is going through you as a test. She is going through to make sure everything works properly and is, I'm sure, writing up all the bugs. Competencies. I don't. You guys probably don't have that on your bar, right? I don't. If you remember from last spring, it's stuff for like teachers in like the admin of the website. So you could create different kinds of tests and different things to see what people are.
No.
They already know.
Alright, so that would be it. It is live right now. Everyone should be enrolled, so once you sign in, you can look at the class. You can deal with that however you want. You guys are experienced with this. The juniors are experienced with this too, but they ask some odd questions. So I'm going to answer some odd questions in case you have them. You don't have to ask them. My guess is no one is going to have some of these questions. You are permitted to listen to one, two, three, as many as you would like in a day. Not at the same time, because it won't let you. You have to do them in sequence. But you're not limited to one a day. Questions juniors ask. You can watch several. That's fine. Since it's live, you technically could start, as far as I know, you could start now. You know, if you're like, there's nothing to do these last 5 days of school. I'll just do this. You're welcome to start now. The only requirement is that it's completed by the completion date, because that's when the semester needs to have it completed by. If you are in, let's see, for cults, we're going to take a quiz. I'm going to try to have it all set. So if you need to do the final, we're going to do that on Tuesday in cults class. So you guys in this class will not have anything for cults online. But like Ezekiel, we'll have their final online. I don't know of any other senior classes that have finals online. I mean, Romans you're clearly done with. But if there are, they should all be. You should be able to find them. And I'm going to be helping making sure all that stuff gets on. So in the class page, I'll try to make sure it's at the top. I think, if you've been in Ezekiel, or you can ask someone who's in Ezekiel, I've been putting all that right at the top, so it's very easy to find when you get to the thing. All right, any other questions on this? Yes. You will not turn in your notes. So you receive the notebook, but you don't have to send it in. That's what this question is trying to compensate for, because there's just, it would be a huge amount of money to have you guys mail it in, and then us mail it back. It's not worth it for anyone. So that's what they're trying to do, I think, with the questions. Any other questions? Everyone feel good and groovy with it? All right. Excellent. Okay. Oh, yes, a little preview of Peter there. Good thing you're doing a Peter class. Okay, and we need to sing a song.
Whatever we sing,
you're stopping on Tuesday. All right. So let's sing together as practice. Yes. Tuesday. So we will be doing this on Tuesday. No, yeah, it's fine. You're in the back, Robbie. You didn't hear. We just had this conversation just a moment ago. I thought it was the volunteers. If you volunteered, you are a counterpointer. So does everyone remember if you were a volunteer or not? If you don't remember, you're a volunteer. That's the way it works. All right, let's sing, and then we will get into our material for the day. The joy of the Lord is my strength. 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 Okay, we gotta stop. You guys are like, the sleepy of the sleepy is my sleepy, sleepy, sleepy. Okay, we can start lower, but we need to get out of lethargy. Lethargy. You guys are like, joy. And you guys sing like I feel. And that's not, we want to inspire. We want to inspire our fellow students and staff alike. So I'll start a little lower, sorry. And but we're gonna energize it. Get it going. Make it exciting. All right. Where are we at? He gives me living water, right?
He gives me living water, and I thirst no more. He gives me living water, and I thirst no more. He gives me living water, and I thirst no more. The joy of the Lord is my strength.
Smile while you sing.
He fills my mouth with laughter, and I laugh, ha, ha. He fills my mouth with laughter, and I laugh, ha, ha. He fills my mouth with laughter, and I laugh, ha, ha. The joy of the Lord is my strength.
Okay, no more smiles.
Ha, 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 ha. The joy of the Lord is my strength.
Really good, except for two of you who apparently cannot control the smiles. No. It's all good. Thanks, guys. I feel better. Let's talk about Colts class. This is our summary kind of lesson. Because there is a major challenge to teaching Colts class. And that is, we cannot cover every cult. It turns out, there is a whole bucket full of them. So, it's not something we can cover in class. We have covered some major cults. We have covered some major religions. We've talked about some of the individualistic beliefs. So, this is kind of the summary. What do we do with all of this type of thing? Because I want you prepared when you meet anyone of a different religious belief. You know, hopefully we've covered enough that you're going to have at least some idea of some things, but there are going to be times you're going to run into people who, you know, they believe something we've never covered, and that's, you know, it's fine, but I want you prepared for that. So what do we do? Yay! This is a review process of kind of proclaiming, defending the gospel in a world of people with various religious views, and ideas. And to be honest, even when you're finding, you run into people who are, say, LDS, you run into people who are Muslim, all sorts of things, you may find a high degree of variance in what they believe. Like, you're going to go, well, you know, as an LDS person, I know what you believe X, Y, Z, that kind of thing, because that's what the Mormon Church teaches. And you'll find lots of people who go, well, I don't really hold to that part. I don't hold to this part. To be fair to them, lots of people in the church do this, right? There are lots of people in the church who kind of pick and choose. Well, I don't like that part of the Bible, so I don't read that. It's a problem in the church, but you're going to run into that too. So always be aware that you're going to run into people with unique beliefs. So, some effective questions to ask in that kind of situation. Number one, do you worship the living God? This is just going to get the conversation started. When we talk about worship, are you, your religious view, do you believe that you are worshiping a living God? Is your God a living being? Now, some are going to say yes, some are going to say no. The point is not, I mean, this is not a catch them in a corner kind of question. This is just establishing a rapport, having an understanding of what their view is on those kinds of things. So, the question is not, is your God real to you? Because you could worship a real thing that's not a living thing. Additionally, the quality of life does not necessitate that the being is God, in that kind of thing. I mean, demons who appear as gods can be very real. So just because they're saying, yes, you know, this seems like the real thing to me, we can understand that it's not necessarily God, but we're establishing the position, we're coming into the conversation. Is your God a living God? Second, do you know the God you worship? Like, at a personal level, do you have a relational experience with your God? Do you know him or her or whatever they happen to worship? Religion often has an abstract component, and in many religions, the object of worship is not knowable. Islam kind of has this. They can know about Allah, but they don't know him. They don't relate to him. They don't have that kind of relationship with him. So he's you can know about him, but he's not knowable at a personal level. This question might also present the opportunity to distinguish between knowing about God and knowing him. This is actually a valuable question in the church too. Especially in my experience, in kind of the area we are in here, in the like breadbasket. We're not really in the breadbasket of the United States. We're like, we're the wicker, right? Like on the outside of the breadbasket. The breadbasket's over there, and we're holding it in. But even here, when you run into typically more conservative religious positions, I have found an experience that a lot of times we have a lot of people in churches that they know about God, but they don't know God. And so this is a good question. It's a slight distinction, but it's a really important distinction to come to. It was a village missionary. A missionary with Village Missions that I heard speaking one time, and so this was also his experience about like rural America. But there are a lot of people who know about God who don't know God, and it's an important distinction to make. Third question: what has your God done for you? So you have a religious view, you know, this person has a religious view, and you can kind of work into these questions. Now, listen to the answers, because someone may say to the first one, when you say, do you worship a living God? They're going to say no. There are formal religious things, particularly from some of the Eastern religions. They don't worship a living God. You know, they're concerned about the principle of the universe or the oneness of the universe, something like that. They're not worshiping a living God. So if they said no, and then you're just blindly asking questions, and you're like, so what has your God done for you? And they're like, I don't worship a God. So you have to go back to step one. So don't do that. Have you ever had those conversations on the phone with people? You guys are younger, so I don't know how many like junk calls you've gotten. But I've occasionally gotten some, and I'm like, they're like, would you like a new vacuum cleaner or whatever it is or something? And I'm like, no, I don't vacuum my floor. I just let it pile up. And they like, you can tell they're reading their card and they keep going. And they're like, well, you know, this is the thing for you. And so what kind of vacuum cleaner? And I'm like, I already told you I didn't want one. I've had that happen several times. So I was like, were you not listening to me 2 minutes ago when I said this is not what it is? And sometimes it's not junk calls. Sometimes it's been like real calls and I'm trying to get like service for something or whatever. And I'm like, you're not paying attention. So pay attention to the people. But as you're following up through this, if they believe in a God and they say, well, yes, I can know my God or I can't know my God, whatever it is, if they believe in a God, then you can kind of go, okay, so what has that your God done for you? What is your expectation? What is that relationship? What's being accomplished there? Answers, of course, are going to vary very wildly. Probably as many people as you talk to may have different answers to this. If the person does not recognize benefit, like they're like, well, I don't know what my God has ever done for me. And I think you'll run into people who are like that. They worship a God. They don't know. They don't know what that God has ever done for them. And that may happen. So if they're like, I'm not really sure, that's a good place to introduce the gospel. Well, let me tell you what my God has done for me, and actually what my God has done for you too. You may not believe him, you may reject him right now, but this is what's true about God. He sent his son to be a sacrifice for our sins. Not just my sins. Even your sins. He wasn't here to die for the people who were following him, because there was none. You know, and you can go to Romans, we're all sinners, that kind of thing. So it's a good place to just be aware of how you can bring the gospel into conversations. Regardless, however, one may follow up with the next question, which is, does your God guarantee your entrance into heaven or paradise? Or, you know, what is it your expectation is after this life? And as we've talked about, very few people, their expectation is to go to hell. Now, I've run into some people, like, very, you know, blustering kinds of things. Yeah, I'm going to go to hell so I can be with all my friends and things like that. I've run into some of those people. They don't actually believe in hell. I mean, they're talking about it. But if we had any real idea of that kind of consequential place, no one is going to say, oh, yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to be with my friends. No, you're not going to be with your friends. You're all going to be on fire. Like from a biblical perspective, it's not there won't be time to socialize. You'll be separate, you'll be alone, you'll be in fire and in the dark, outside of the glory of God. So, very few people, though, that's going to be their position, that I'm going to hell. Most people believe something good is going to happen to them. Because that's what we want to believe, right? We want to believe we're okay. We want to believe in positive things. And so often if you say, what is the expectation? What do you think is going to happen to you? They're going to have a positive thing. But this gives you a place to go, okay, so is that guaranteed to you? Does your God guarantee that you're going to get to go there? And you may run into different answers here. If they say, yes, my God does guarantee that, then you ask, how? Not meanly, not rudely. Like, I want to know. You're saying your God is guaranteed that you will go to heaven, or you'll go to paradise, or you'll go to the next celestial level, or whatever it happens to be. How does he or she, how does your God do that? What is the guarantee? Almost every time, you're going to find out that the guarantee is based on the work of the individual. That their God is not actually guaranteeing it. The individual is guaranteeing it because it's going to come back to works. So most of the time, the answer will point to the work of the individual, which you can explain. That's not a guarantee. That's you doing stuff. So you're telling me your God is not actually like doing anything for you. You're the one who has to do it. That provides you with a good place to interject the gospel. I mean, all of this is vehicles to the gospel, because if we're not communicating the gospel, we're having an interesting exchange of ideas, but it's nothing productive. So, especially for the point of this class, we're looking at getting the gospel. So they say, oh yes, my God guarantees it. If I do all of these particular works at our temple, and if I live a really good life, and I give lots of money, then God guarantees that I'm going to go to heaven. And right there you go, well, that's not much of a guarantee. Like, your God then, but what is your God doing? It sounds like you're doing everything. And I think that's a problem. And then from there, you could go in any number of ways. It's going to be, you know, based on context, based on the individual. Because you could say, you could point out the futility of works. Kind of like we've talked about, you know, there's a standard of perfection. Is that what your God is expecting? Like, your God expects all those things. What if you failed in one spot? Does that ruin it forever? Let me tell you what my God has done. And then you're right back at the gospel. If they say to this question, no, my God does not guarantee it, then you get to go like, oh, that's very unfortunate. I mean, don't be rude or condescending. That is true. You're like, yeah, I believe there's a heaven, and I believe my God is like, here's heaven, but he's not doing anything for me to get there. And that's a sad state. Let me show you something from the Bible. You know, have you heard of the Bible? Have you heard of Christ? Let me show you why it's significant, why what he has done is significant, because it guarantees this is where you go. Not because of you. Your works are immaterial. He is the one who's accomplished it. So if the answer is no, then you get to talk to them about how to be certain about eternal life. Sharing your testimony may also be effective at this point, because you're going to have a different experience. You get to say, well, I do know, and this is why. All right, so why do we proclaim the gospel in all of these? We can go through these really fast. These should be kind of basic reminders, but just for you to remember, you're commanded to share. God loves the world. He desires all to be saved. All of the sins of all men have been paid for by Christ. All are invited to come to Christ, and Christ is the only way to God. And so that's why you're in this conversation. That's why we want to interact with the cults, because of these things. All right, guidelines for reaching religious people with the gospel. Now, these are general. So this is regardless of the kind of person you run into. There are some questions maybe you could ask, get conversation started. Here are just some general guidelines, things to keep in mind in life if you're going to be sharing the gospel with people of a religious background. One, be loving. We've talked about that several times over the semester, but you will not really win anything in an argument, even if you win the argument. Be loving. It is surprising how often just caring for people makes them come back and be like, what's, I need to know more. What's different? Or you talk to people who have come to church. Why are they coming to church? Because their neighbor was helping them out and they want to know more about this now. So be loving. Two, be biblical. Make sure that what you share is from the Bible. Avoid giving your opinion or just following traditions. And so many of other religious things are built around what the individual thinks. Especially in those more individualistic things, and we see that all over because those individualistic things, the spiritist stuff and that kind of thing, it's in every culture at large. Like, not everyone is practicing animism necessarily, but we see spiritualistic ideas all over. That's very individual. And so it's important when you're presenting something to say, this is not, I am not talking about you believing in my personal, like, God that I've created. I'm saying there is a God who loves us all, and that's what I want to look at. So be biblical. Number three, never argue the gospel. Arguing builds walls between you and another person. Rarely will it win someone around, especially in a religious conversation. You may take opportunities to share truth, but be careful to not attack the individual or their beliefs. It's not your job. If they believe something that's unbiblical, they're wrong. Like, that's the fact of it. But approaching it from a position of like, well, you're wrong because you don't believe the Bible is condescending. It's rude. It's arrogant. And it's just going to put people off. I mean, it doesn't matter if you have the truth. I'm not going to listen to you. I am sure you guys, at some point in your lives, have disagreed with someone on principle. Like, I'm not even going to investigate whether it's true or not. You're just a jerk, and so I disagree with you. I assume everything out of your mouth is filthy and rotten, because you're a filthy and rotten person. Now, maybe you haven't thought all of those things, but I know I've had those experiences with people where I'm like, I don't even care. I am not going to do business with this company because you have been so rude that a business that is employing you is not a business that I trust with, you know, taking care of my money or whatever. It's a major problem. It can be. I've known some very intelligent men. I can think of one guy. He's a younger, well, I mean, he's not younger now. He was younger at the time. Very intelligent. Guy was really interested in, like, apologetics and those kinds of things. But sometimes would just come into conversations and beat people down. Like, well, you don't understand. Like, and just... And he would be right, but you could see, like, on the people he's talking to, like, they just don't even want to be around him because it was such an offensive attitude. So be careful with that. We don't have to argue the gospel. Just present the gospel. Understand it and present it, and that's kind of compelling to people. Don't criticize their church, religion, or their philosophy, whatever their religious view is. Belittling a person or their beliefs will not convince her or him of your own. You'd be like, well, oh, what you believe is stupid. They're going to go, oh, you're right. What do you believe? Because I need something not stupid. Right? No one's going to do that. I mean, this is just like general life stuff. Just be careful about insulting people's things. I made the mistake, this is many years ago, this is like first couple of months I was a student here at Frontier, and I got involved in, our Christian service setup was different at the time. Like, my freshman year, I did everything. I was all over the place because I was so excited about learning stuff. So I was doing all sorts of things. And I got involved in a nursing home ministry. And like my first week there, I was talking to one of the caretakers, and now, I come from Colorado. I live on the plains, but I learned my directions because there are very large mountains on one side. And so that's how I knew where everything was. And I loved the mountains, had been in the mountains many times. And so this is like my first or second like drive to Scotts Bluff when I went to the nursing home we were serving at. And we went over the Wildcat, like the Wildcat Mountains. And, we went over, you know, you're like driving, you're like, and I was like, that, where are the mountains? And that was really funny. And so I was talking to this lady at the nursing home, and I was saying, yeah, I'm from Colorado, and was giving a little bit of my background. So yeah, it was really funny. I was coming over here to the Wildcat Mountains. But this is a hill. It was like one hill, like a Wildcat Hill, but I guess we couldn't call it that or something. And I offended her. And she was right to be offended. I was young, and like I wasn't trying to be offensive. It was just the fact that the Wildcats aren't mountains. So it wasn't meant to be offensive, but it came across offensive and put a wall up right there. Well, imagine doing something like that when you're dealing with something as personal as their religious belief. It's going to put up walls. Even if there are things like you don't like about your church. Maybe you're looking at your church and you're like, there are things here I struggle with, I don't like. But someone comes along and starts insulting your church, you're going to be like, you need to shut up. I love my church. This is my church. You can't say anything about it. You don't even go to my church and stuff like that. I mean, that's going to be, it's rude. And you're going to dig in hard about that. So if you want a place where you can talk to someone and share the gospel with them, you need to take care of these issues. Don't insult their things. But, I mean, there are things, just much different ways that we can approach it. So don't belittle their beliefs. Number five, never assume. Even if your friend agrees with you, do not assume your religious friend understands the gospel. Okay, there are different things you have to be careful about the assumption here. If they're like, oh yeah, I believe that too, don't assume that they do. I've had conversations with like younger people in like youth ministry kinds of things, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, I shared the gospel with my Mormon friend, and I was telling her about Jesus and stuff, and they believe the same thing we do, so we were so excited because we're all going to heaven." I mean, they don't believe actually the same thing you do. What? But they said they did. You see, yeah, they don't actually believe the gospel. They say they do, but they don't. And so don't make those assumptions. Ask. Get real things. Have good conversations with people. Even if they're using the right words. Look at Christ's example with Nicodemus and the woman at Samaria and how he approaches those things. He's willing to really dig in and talk to them. And like with the woman in Samaria, the woman at the well, I mean, she's agreeing all the time. Oh, you're really smart. Yep, I agree with you. And he's like, no, you don't. I mean, nicely and lovingly, and Jesus has in his walk with the Lord, maybe some advantages that we don't always have, but he's like, oh, do you? So what about the guy you're living with and all the other guys you've been married to? And she's like, huh? But he's listening to them. He's talking to them, kind of approaching them where they're at. He's not expecting them to come to him where he's at. He's approaching them. Number six, don't be in a hurry. If someone is steeped in a religion that cannot save, or where the gospel is not being preached or made clear, you may not be able to win them to Christ in a 15-minute conversation. Now, sometimes that happens. And people will share their stories. Oh, yeah, so I was standing in the line and it turned out this person in front of me was... I mean, you hear crazy stories every now and then. Like, the person in front of me didn't just belong to a Wiccan coven. They were like head of it. They were in charge of a whole system. They were a distributor. And we were in line at the grocery store, and I started sharing the gospel with them. They got saved and burned all their stuff right there and made a dramatic change in their life. And you're like, wow. It should always be like that. Nope. Rarely ever like that. People are part of a religious system for a reason. Like there was something at one point they were seeking, or is something they were pursuing, or it's their own culture. There's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of people in the church like that. There's a lot of people all over that they belong to a religious organization or a religious system or whatever because that's how they were raised. And so they don't know anything outside of that. But there's a reason that they adhere to that system. So understand, when you're presenting an alternate system and you're saying, this is Jesus Christ and what he's done, that may be a hard change for them to make. Because whatever reason it was that they were doing this, do they have to walk back on that? Do they have to step back? Sometimes they don't. And you can say, look, I know you're searching for answers. This isn't going to provide you with answers because it doesn't have them, but Jesus has the answer. And so maybe you can move that. But in a lot of cases, you're going to have them walk back on something. They thought this was going to be the solution. And when they come to Christ, they're going to have to admit at some level, this doesn't solve it. this isn't the answer. I need Jesus. And so that's often a longer conversation. It's not an immediate kind of thing. And if it's culture, that can be even harder. Because they may view that, and this would be true in like subcultures, like Mormonism in Utah is a good example of that. There are some other places, Amish, some of those communities, good example of that. When you go into India, some of the other Asian nations and communities, like, and you're presenting Christ, it's not just that they're switching even their religious view, they're going to have to leave often their family. It is going to create a separation between them and their family, and that's a hard thing for people to give up. So don't be in a rush. Be patient. It's part of loving them, is taking the time that it's going to take to share the gospel effectively. Sowing and reaping is a common concept in sharing the gospel. Those are farming terms. Farming is not an immediate job. You don't go, today I'm going to plant corn. There's corn, that's harvest. Nope, it takes time. So be willing to take the time. Next, make sure of your motives that they are pure and right. It is not notching a belt, making a mark, winning for other people. This is stuff I've talked about a number of times at camps in dealing with counselors. That the goal is not to save more kids in your cabin than someone else. In fact, we talk about often with counselors, like, the goal is not to, like, you don't make barriers and be like, this is my kid. You know, no one else gets to share the gospel with this one. This one's mine. And if they don't get saved, or if they get saved, it has to come through me. And that's not the right attitude. But people are weird, and we get weirdly competitive. Right? I mean, churches do that. Church is like, these are my people. Don't come over here taking my people. Which, why would we want to if they're hearing the truth? So, people just get weird and competitive, but you make sure your motives are pure and right. Do not give a religious person something else to do. This is when you're presenting in any religious context, and you're bringing Christ into any religious context, and they're already dealing with something religious, what you're really presenting is something radically different than anything they know or they're currently doing. And that's the truth of it. It should be the truth of it. Every religious system is going to have something that either they're doing something or they're doing nothing. Now, I'm going to get to the doing nothing in a second. But the vast majority of them, they're doing something. Even if they say they're not doing, you know, it's by grace. Lots of religious systems use the term grace because Christianity has been so big and influential, especially in Western cultures, that a lot of other things use the term grace, have no idea what it means. But chances are, by like 90%, chances are they're already in a system where they have to do all this stuff. So if your presentation of the gospel is, hey, you have to do this. Now you have to pray. And now you have to read your Bible every day. And now you have to do this. You have not seen that person get saved. You have seen them transfer their obligation from one thing to another. And now they're still trusting in works. One of the things we have to disrupt is this trust in works. Now there is every now and then you'll run into like the weird thing, especially if it's an individualistic thing, where they don't have to do anything. God just saves me, regardless of anything I do. The issue of that, of course, biblically, is that you would confront with that is like, well, isn't there accountability? Are you responsible to a holy and just God? And those kinds of things. So if that's the case, just doing anything and thinking God is going to save you becomes a problem. And so you're going to demonstrate that something has to be done. And Jesus has done that. So our God provides for all of that, but it's not just because we sit back and do nothing. It's because He's done the work. And then we are now trusting in what He has done, which engages faith. So it's not that there's nothing. It's that God is the one who's accomplished it. Since this concept may be foreign to them, be prepared to take time for explanation. You will have to explain grace, sometimes multiple times. Answer their questions about without being sidetracked, and we've addressed some of those. You may want to get bogged down and be tempted to get bogged down in doctrinal details and stuff. Don't get caught up in their doctrinal details. Find out about it after they're saved. And don't let you get sideswiped by their questions. They may have good and legitimate questions, and that's totally fine. But it is also totally fine to say, that's a really good question. Let's focus first on this thing. Let's deal with this. And then, once we've dealt with that, we can start addressing some of those other issues. And so, you know, answer it. Sometimes some things are quick and easy to answer, but stay focused on where you're at. An example of this in a very different venue is in the debate about abortion. And sometimes, if you make a statement about, you know, I'm pro-life, I'm going to hold to this, someone who is not pro-life may say, well, so you think, you know, it's regardless of consequence, you know, what about you in it's usually like rape and incest in like those bizarre cases. You know, are you still for that? You can say, as someone in the debate, that's a legitimate question. But let's focus in on the majority, because that makes up like a fractional issue. So let's take care of the majority. Are you saying them for the majority that we agree and it's wrong? Now, most of the time in the debate, when I've been talking to people about that, they go, well, no. And I'm like, okay, then you're just blowing smoke trying to distract us from this issue. So I'm willing to talk about that, but let's focus first on the main thing. And then we can start addressing those kinds of issues on the side. But let's deal with the main issue. You can do the same thing in religious conversations. You say, oh, so do I have to take communion? We can answer that. Well, no. You don't have to take communion. You have to trust in Jesus Christ. You know, and we could talk about communion, but let's focus on the thing that's needful first. That's Jesus Christ. Oh, they say, what about the Nephilim? Do you believe that they were angels? Or they were people? I've run into people who are not believers at all, who have a lot of knowledge. They've listened to radio things or something. And they seem to attach to like some of the most crazy kinds of or controversial types of things. And not that believing the Nephilim are angels is crazy, because that's the view I actually hold. But and they're going to hold on to like all these things and then just bring them up. So you're like, let me share the gospel with you. And then they're like, what about angels? Don't get sidetracked. So that's a really interesting question. But it's not going to answer the primary thing, which is what's happening to you. You know, if you believe there may be angels or demons or people or whatever, do you want to spend your time in eternity with the angels or the demons? You know, you can find ways to kind of direct things back and get back on track with the gospel. So stay focused on that. Do not dwell on non-essentials, which is a connected kind of idea. Stay with the things that are major. Be faithful in living Christ and presenting Christ to the lost. A life which does not reflect Christ will ultimately compromise the message of the gospel. Now, it doesn't mean God can't use those things sometimes, but you're going to be much more effective in sharing the gospel in terms of just communication with people. Like, they're going to see your life if you're being consistent in your life and your walk with Christ. And lastly, present the gospel clearly, simply, and biblically, which hopefully you are prepared to do thanks to your excellent training in Frontier School of the Bible. Just make it so people can understand. You should be able to explain the gospel so 10-year-olds can understand it. You don't have to dress it up either when you get to 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds. Keep explaining it like they're 10. It's not going to be like... You don't have to talk to them like they're 10. Oh, let me tell you about the gospel. You don't have to do that. We keep it nice and simple, and people will be like, oh, okay, I get that. You all are young enough. How many of you have had to explain something technological on a phone to a parent? Or a grandparent? Right? And you don't talk to them like they have 40 years of experience with technology, right? You go back to basic things. There's a round thing at the bottom. It's, you know, push that. The button? Yeah, the button. You know, whatever. That's the way it is. Do things like that here. They are maybe struggling with some of the things. Keep it simple so they can understand. That will move the gospel forward. All right, that is class for today. You are dismissed. I will see you for cults class tomorrow during chapel. There will be a quiz tomorrow during chapel. The last quiz is tomorrow. And we're going to talk about Christmas, so be ready. Because it's Festive Friday.